Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:19 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is August 17th. Well, Bitcoin today was down $1,100, so it was looking a little dicey yesterday, and then it broke lower in early trading this morning. I was rather glad that I had a stop on the position after thinking about it when I concluded the audio yesterday. I thought that it was probably going to be the best course of action, considering the weakness that we'd seen in the precious metal markets and the upward pressure we're seeing in the bond markets. Now, I think it's also not particularly unexpected from a cyclical basis, and we did have a lot of speculation that drove the Bitcoin price higher, as the question about whether a spot priced ETF will be permissioned by the SEC, or indeed that there might be several permissioned all at once. That's still a quite, I think, a likely potential outcome. But in the meantime, what we're definitely seeing is more risk-off behavior, and Bitcoin is a risky asset. So there's absolutely no question that some of the risk is being taken off now, as we look at prices pulling back from the 30,000 level. Now, coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average, that might potentially offer an area of support, but I think a lot is going to hinge on what happens with bond yields. And bond yields are back testing the peak from October of 2022. Now, we've had a pretty substantial move on the upside, 6 days in a row. And now we're testing the peaks, so it wouldn't be all that surprising if we see a little bit of pause and consolidation here. But I think one of the bigger challenges is that the trend is quite clear, and support has been found on repeated occasions in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, I still hold a long position in bonds, and I'm going to continue holding it because I think that deflation is inevitable at some stage. But there's not a lot of there's not a lot to support it right now. Now, when we think about what's happening in the broader economy, GDP now is up to 5.75%. So that's been a really substantial jump over the last 3 weeks, and it's breaking out. So that's basically showing quite a lot of, I think, enthusiasm around the ability of the economy to continue to grow. Now let's just pay attention to the Global Financial Conditions Indicator. I created this probably 2 or 3 years ago. And what it's looking like is that financial conditions have tightened. When this index goes up, that's tightening conditions. Now, the more back history we look at, then I think the more useful it becomes. Because then we had QE2 beginning in 2011 and 12, with QE3 in there, and then we had the pandemic. And of course, that jump in tightness of financial conditions was directly in response to that. Then, back in October, with yields popping on the upside, then we had the pension crisis in the UK. And now we're looking at bond yields back in the region of those peaks and financial conditions tightening back to levels that, over the course of the last decade, we've seen plenty of examples where some central bank or other has provided additional assistance. So there is certainly the potential here that we're going to have a sufficiently large problem that there will be some central bank is going to have to respond to it. So let's then just think about, well, where are the problems right now? Obviously, what's happening in China has to be one of the major candidates. The renminbi today was a little steadier, right in the region of the lows from late last year. And you've got the Chinese authorities basically telling the big brokerages and banks to step in and start buying the stock market. So this isn't particularly unusual for the Chinese market. This is, and certainly not the first time. And when we look at that CSI 300, well, it is still in the region of the lows from back through December of last year and June, July of this year. And today was an up day. So just the beginnings of some support amid a short-term oversold condition. And then you have the H-share index, which has been down for consecutive days all month, but it didn't then it also rebounded from the intraday lows in here today. So we could see at least some pause of consolidation going on right now. Now, when we look at the Nifty index in India, well, India is not one of the candidates where there's likely to be a lot of problems right now. And the relative strength of the domestic market is really quite impressive. So where might we have another problem? Well, let's just remember that Apple generates about 20% of its income from the Greater China region. Any problems in terms of the growth outlook for China is going to have a knock-on effect on demand for its products. And the share continues to unwind its overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average, and it's coming back into the region of the peaks from back in 2021 and 2022. So now the big question is, how much support are we going to find in this area, and will there be a substantial rebound? Well, I remain short and long of the January 24 puts. So I think that there's at least the potential that it's going to dip below the 200-day moving average. And obviously, a lot is going to hinge on exactly what happens in terms of monetary assistance from central banks. And then, of course, something that I think really struck me today was Walmart came out and said that they've discovered that when people take their Walmart Plus subscription and that they get free shipping, that they spend more money. And that's good news. The share was down in a dynamic manner, and this is a downside key reversal. So it's a failed upside break from what's almost a 3-year range. So when companies can't rally on good news, that basically helps to emphasize the point that we have a market that's rather richly valued. Then, of course, there's the other point. When we look at the return of various stock markets over the year, then, for example, if you are investing in only the Dow Jones, well, you're only up 4% for the year. If you were investing in shorter dated bonds, well, you're probably getting closer to 5%. So for doing nothing at all with your money, you're getting a return of about 5%. If you're putting it in blue chip stocks, you're only getting 4%. Well, if you put it in the Nasdaq, well, you were richly rewarded for doing that. On a currency adjusted basis, that's certainly among the best performers. Mexico wasn't far off that performance either, and a lot of that performance was because of the currency. And then if we look at Japan, well, the nominal appreciation was impressive, but a lot of that performance was paired by the currency. And European markets have pretty much held their own relative to the S&P 500. So let's then pay attention to what's happening with that dollar. So the dollar index is right in the region of the sequence of lower rally highs and the 200-day moving average. And it's being supported by the outlook for more interest rate hikes. When you have GDP now at 5.75, and you have unemployment at historically low levels, and then the core services is still at uncomfortably high levels, well, then there's not much to stop the Federal Reserve from continuing to raise rates, and eventually that's going to create a deflationary outcome. What, of course, they have no real control over is how far it goes. The long and variable lag of monetary policy has been probably longer than normal on this occasion, simply because of the sheer volume of cash that's been printed. What I think is also particularly interesting right now is that the yield curve is beginning to unwind the inversion. So it's now negative 64 basis points. And back in early July, it was around 110. So we've had an a reversal of the inversion in the order of about 50 basis points, which is quite substantial. Now, it did do more than that in March when there was some substantial action to arrest the decline that we saw in the regional banks. But on this occasion, what we're seeing right now is that the long end of the curve is rising faster than the short end, and that investors are reacting both to the almost permanence of higher interest of higher inflation rates, and then the volume of new debt that is being issued by the US Treasury. But then, of course, we have the additional point that it's not just the US Treasury is issuing debt, and it's not just Treasury yields that are pushing on the upside. The German 10-year is also back in the region of its peak from earlier this year, and there's been a rivetingly consistent sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, there's certainly been a loss of momentum, and relative to that trend, this has been a substantial loss of momentum, and we have this sequence of higher reaction lows. A massive reaction against the prevailing trend would be a type 2 top formation characteristic, and it would be the proverbial bolt from the blue. So that is something that we should be aware of. But we don't have a lot of evidence just yet that it's something like that is about to occur, because inflationary pressures are still very much in control. And then let's also think about what's happening in the oil price. So it's been down for 4 consecutive days, and it attempted to rebound in here today, but couldn't quite muster it. One of the things that I think is something that's a distinct feature of the market right now is how smug some of the forecasts are for a massive new bull market in oil. Well, we definitely had the break of the sequence of lower rally highs, but if the trend is going to remain intact, it absolutely needs to hold that hold the region of the 200-day moving average. So, what happens next, I think, is going to be particularly telling. And this also helps to bring us to the question of the whole decarbonization question. There's obviously a lot of political capital, and then pandering to the media and to the green lobby in saying that yes, we're going to have a phenomenal build-out of renewable energy, and that's obviously then going to require a lot more resources. But when we think about what's going on in China and the massive debt loads that are outstanding there, well, if they go through a deleveraging, there is obviously the potential that that is going to hit demand growth for commodities. And oil is obviously one of those, but then, of course, all the industrial resources are as well. And I think that's one of the big contradictions that we have in the market, that when there's an assumption about the massive demand growth and the huge investment that that's going to move into something and no real evidence of it, and the complete then refusal to consider that some of the status quo that the market has relied on for basically 20 years is under threat, then what we should be expecting is a great deal of volatility and potentially lower prices overall in the commodity complex. And then copper is often referred to as Dr. Copper, but that doctor is a Chinese doctor, and it's much more reflective of what's happening in China. So the price also attempted to rebound in here this week, or excuse me, in here today, and then wasn't quite able to hold on to all of the move either. When we think about the LME Metals Index, it's updated on a 1-day lag, so it'll probably be a little steadier tomorrow, but it is coming back down to the lower side of its range. And there's clearly the potential here that if China continues to underperform, well, then they're going to we'll probably see lower commodity prices. Then, of course, there is one other potential issue, that they are supporting the renminbi at present. But one clear way to support the renminbi would be to sell treasuries. And considering the geopolitical tensions that we have right now, selling treasuries in order to support the currency would probably kill two birds with one stone from the perspective of the Chinese administration. I'm not saying they're going to dump treasuries, but accelerating their selling program is certainly something that could help to support their currency in the short term. So it's something that we should be paying attention to. And with downward pressure on the Nasdaq, then we're also starting to see some of the short-term overbought conditions clearly unwound, and the Europe Stoxx 600 closed below the 200-day moving average in here today. Then countries like Australia, South Africa, Brazil, Canada, they are acutely sensitive to what happens in terms of Chinese commodity demand. And the ASX 200 is back below the 200-day moving average in here today. And then let's also just keep an eye on what's happening in Canada. And there we have the TSX also pulling back from the upper side of its range, and it has really quite clear type 2 top formation with right-hand extension characteristics. So I do think that we're entering more of a risk-off environment, and I've been taking some risk off the table, and I think I will continue to do so. Well, I did do so today because my Bitcoin was stopped out, and I closed my Riot position. There will be wonderful buying opportunities when the trend of monetary tightening turns. Then we've had substantial valuation contraction in the technology sector, most particularly in the fintech sector. So when we see that the monetary environment turns around and we start to see more money being propelled into the economy, I suspect that we're going to have some very significant bull markets. Now, I remain very much of the case of the view that we're going to have shorter, sharper cycles, and that we're all going to get used to taking profits when we see them over the course of the next decade. And I should really have been doing that with my position in Riot. I was up almost 100%, and I should have just taken the profit. But I do think that with Bitcoin, it's possible we could see some weakness in the next 6 months. Then usually it is after the halving, which is in April of this year, that we see the biggest evidence of substantial strength coming through. And that could easily coincide with the trend of monetary conditions improving. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.